Hello and welcome, everybody. Once again, this is the Spitballin' Podcast. It's a Texas Rangers podcast. My name is Ben Rogers, and I'm joined by my good buddy Jamie Newberg, and we got plenty to talk about in Rangerland. First and foremost, possibly the return of their best player, Yu Darvish, returning to the Texas Rangers. What does Yu Darvish returning mean for these guys?
Well, I mean, obviously it gives the team an emotional lift, and it gives the rotation a boost. It ought to help the bullpen. And I mean, there's every reason to believe that the team gets better overall with Yu Darvish in the ranks. And there's no other way to put it. He's, like you said, he's their best player, as long as we're eliminating Nomar Mazara from the conversation. but he strengthens the rotation. He lengthens the bullpen. He gives the whole team more confidence. And, it's can't miss baseball when he's on the mound.
So, and I've heard this before. You know, when a guy has Tommy John, usually it's not his first year back, it's his next year back where he kind of starts coming back into form and gets back to that high level. But I've also heard the theory that with elite pitchers, they are quicker to get back to that elite status. We've heard, we've seen the stats from Yu Darvish in his rehab starts, and we've heard he's touching 97. He's got incredible control. Jamie, do you expect to see full power Yu Darvish, or, that's on a pitch count, or just some lesser version where he just doesn't have it like he does when he's at full power?
No, I think they'll turn him loose. There may be a little bit of a tighter leash on the pitch count early on. I think he threw 85, 87 pitches in his last tune-up in AA, and so I don't expect to see 110 his first time or his first three or four times out. I think they're going to be careful to make sure. But the velocity is there. But, you alluded to the Tommy John effect. I think that what typically happens with those second and third tier pitchers that we've seen over the years is the velocity comes back fairly quickly once healthy, but the location does not. It's more about the command that sometimes takes time. And I've heard the same thing pointed out that you alluded to, that you look at some of the better pitchers that have come back from Tommy John surgery the last 4 or 5 years, that hasn't necessarily been the case. If they're able to locate out of the chute, the velocity is there as well. They can be, it can be almost like there's been no beat skipped. And, you certainly hope that's what we see out of Darvish. The little bit that I saw out of his rehab starts, it looked like the breaking ball had, good bite on it. Fastball was locating. Some of the walks that he issued, there were comments that were maybe half joking, half not, that the umpires were fooled, and he walked a couple batters that really should have been strike three, and the umpire just sort of gave up on it. With the way the breaking ball bites. So if the stuff is there, and the command, more importantly, is there, then he could be the Yu Darvish of old right from the get go. But I do think we're going to see some 80 to 90 pitch starts at first, just with the team being very careful that if they've got him for this season and one more, at least guaranteed, you want to be sure that we get Yu Darvish for that full year and a half and not have to worry about any setbacks.
Well, with the Rougned Odor suspension coming into the fold, and the plan for while he's gone appears to be Jerkson Profar to, as soon as the fight happened, you saw Profar start getting reps at second base as opposed to shortstop. So that appears to be the obvious insurance policy here. What are you expecting to see from Profar during this short little stay here? And do you think it's going to make us want Profar to stay a Ranger, stay up in the bigs? Or do you think it's going to be something that just inflates his trade value and has the rest of the league peering on with mouths watered?
It's a different situation for sure than when Mazara came up, because even if Profar is lights out for a week, however long he's up, there really isn't a spot for him now. Elvis is playing tremendous baseball right now, and Rugi's not going anywhere. It definitely would give the team some options going forward, whether it's in July or this winter, if they decide the time is right to move a player from the middle infield in a big trade. You certainly want Profar to perform well when he's up to help his case in that regard. What was really interesting to me is, you mentioned that the team moved him to second base in AAA the day that the fight happened in Arlington. That was a clear indication. And the team has said the plan was to give him nothing but shortstop for a month, help build up the shoulder strength, and then start to move him around like they had before he got injured to increase his versatility. But I don't think it was coincidental that the shift to second base happened the day that Odor got in a fight, especially since he's played nothing but second base since that time. So I think we are going to see him up, and by time this podcast is out, he may have been called up. And the second interesting thing is, once Chu went down, it became a little less clear who's going to lead off while Odor is out. And the latest move at AAA was to put Profar in the leadoff spot, which happened on Wednesday night. And they flipped him into Shields and put DeShields in the two hole, and Profar led off. Makes me wonder if when Profar is up for that week or however long he's up, if he's playing second base, he may be leading off. Because right now, you could, I guess, conceivably put Ian Desmond at the top, but do you want to do that? And the way he's been, you know, swinging the bat, you want him in an RBI slot. I think you want him behind a couple guys that you expect to get on base, you know, whether it's hitting second or, you know, third or fifth or whatever. I don't think it's ideal to put him at the top, and maybe that's where Profar lands.
It's hard not to consider the finances of baseball, though. It's just hard, and, you know, you see Profar, and you see Elvis, and you see, you know, Elvis has $88 million on his deal, and do you know exactly where we are with Profar right now in terms of how many years of arbitration he has and in team control and that sort of thing?
I know he's got an option left. Okay, so that's that. To get that out of the way, he'll have an option in 2017, so he doesn't need to make the big club. In terms of service time, as we stand here before these microphones, I don't have it before me, so I don't know for sure. I think that he was he arbitration eligible this winter? I want to say that he might have been a Super 2 and has already had his first arbitration year, which means he'd have three remaining
right
before he could be a free agent. But you know what? I've said this about different players on this podcast before, and I will say it about Profar. If he is here in 3 years, that means he's starting, okay? He's not going to be on this bench for 3 years. You're going to get more value out of him trading him unless you trade someone else to create a spot. If Profar is starting here and is producing at the level that the team has always, you know, projected and envisioned, he's never going to see free agency. He's going to get extended after year four or year five, and service time won't be an issue. That's the same for Odor. That's going to be the same for Mazzara. You know, when people start talking about, oh, you know, you got to send him down for 2 weeks so that you get that extra year at the end, I don't believe that to be the case with Texas. Because, you know, that's true in Oakland. That used to be true in Houston. The teams that don't spend a lot of money on their payroll and know that they're going to lose players when they reach free agency, that extra year means a lot. But for the Rangers, if it's a core guy that they want to keep around, I don't think they ever get to the end of that 6 year. So I don't think service time is so much of an issue for Profar.
Man, I every podcast I do, every Ranger segment I do on the radio, I'm trading Elvis all the time, and it's crazy because I love Elvis and I love the infectious smile. And now he's playing, as you pointed out, I think in the last podcast we did, that if he was a free agent, he'd probably get a contract very similar to what he has remaining based on how effective he's been. He's been great, but I still don't feel like he's going to be as good of an offensive player as Profar. I think Profar is going to be significantly better. He's going to drive the ball in the gaps better. He's going to have more power. He's just going to be a better all-around offensive player. And, you know, I'm not convinced that he is a massive drop-off defensively. I know he is a drop-off. Elvis is great. But then I also look at what happened against the Blue Jays. What happened to the defensive wizard of the infield, you know, and you're supposed to be a defensive specialist, go, you know, and he fell apart a little bit. And so I guess I say all that to say now, as Elvis is playing his best baseball and looks fantastic, he's been incredible, maybe now he is showing that it's a tradable contract, and maybe now is the time to sell high on Elvis.
And when you say now, you mean November, December, right?
Yeah, whenever.
You definitely don't do it during a contending season.
Right.
There's no chance that Elvis gets moved, no matter what Profar is doing in AAA. They're not trading Elvis during the season unless they're 12 games out.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. And they're not going to be 12 games out.
Right.
So in the winter, yeah. You know, if Profar, and to me, it's not just me, shortstop's about defense, okay? Yeah, Profar projects to produce more offensively than Andrus if both are playing at their peak. Ian Desmond's a better offensive player than Andrus, but you're not putting Ian Desmond at shortstop, at mm-hmm. least. You know, you're not looking right now to move Elvis so you can get Desmond on the infield, because Elvis is the better defensive player. And as long as Elvis is effective offensively, which this year he has been, And that's a great shortstop because he's making all the plays. And I don't worry about the Toronto series, really the Toronto inning.
Right.
He had a good defensive second half last year. He's had a really good defensive spring this year. He's an elite defensive shortstop, and you don't move that to move in a better bat in Profar unless you feel really good about the arm strength of Profar, and that's a scouting issue more than a statistical issue. And you know that the Rangers front office, they're getting reports every day from Round Rock, from the coaches and from their scouts that they're dispatching to the games. How's Profar looking on the throws in the hole, on the pivot at second base? You know, when he comes across the bag, is there some life in the throw to first? That's all got to be there for them to even consider moving Elvis, unless they're going to consider, you know, a contingency plan where there's a shortstop not even around right now who would step in next year, because it's not going to be Alberto, at least on a starting level. But yeah, you know, it's you hope that Profar is healthy. And when I say healthy, I think he is healthy, but is the arm strength back mm-hmm. to where it was? If it is, and they feel like he can play a plus shortstop, even if it's not at Anders' level, then yeah, you've got an opportunity this winter to decide, do we move Profar as a, you know, key piece and a big deal, or do we even consider moving Elvis to, you know, recoup some payroll breathing room, maybe to give to Desmond or maybe to give to somebody else from the outside?
Yeah, I, and again, it always comes down to that payroll. And I just think they're getting choked by some big contracts with the Prince deal, the Chew deal, the Elvis deal. Now Beltre's got two more at 18, Cole Hamels. They've got some big contracts. Now they do have some other guys who are going to play on the cheap, so to speak. And they've got, you know, stacked minor leagues. We talk about their top five prospects quite a bit, whether it's in whatever order you have them in: Nomar Mazara, Joey Gallo, Luis Ortiz, Lewis Brinson, and Dylan Tate. Of those guys, you know, if you look at, all right, we're going to have Mazara, we're going to have Gallo. You know, if you could figure out a way to get Profar in the mix, you've already got Rugi. You know, I see a lot of guys who can play on the cheap, so to speak, which allows you to overpay in some other areas. But it also creates this issue where, as you're looking at the trade deadline this year, are you willing to part ways with any of those young guys? You know, what would you have to get back? Like, you're not going to trade Nomar, obviously. He's here. He's not going anywhere. But to trade Gallo or Ortiz or Brinson or Tate, you know, what would you conceivably acquire that would make you give up on those guys?
I mean, let's just look at past examples. You're not giving up any of those guys for a rental. That's just not the Rangers' way. They're not going to do it. They're not going to give away a piece they feel very strong about in terms of future projection, top tier of the farm system, for a guy that's going to be here 2 months, and you roll the dice that it's going to help bring a World Series title here. Because if it doesn't, doesn't look good. You know, we've seen it with Dempster and Garza, guys like that. Now, they didn't give up their top tier prospects for them, but still, you hate to see, you know, CJ Edwards out there as one of the Cubs' top prospects now, and Kyle Hendricks pitching well, and there's second tier prospects the Rangers have given up that they'd love to have back because the trades didn't work out. But to trade a guy like Gallo or Ortiz, Tate, you know, it's going to have to be a controllable starting pitcher who is going to fit in at that Hamels Darvish level. You know, is that Sonny Gray who's had a bad year? Can Sonny Gray even command a Joey Gallo right now? Probably. There's probably enough teams out there that would give up a, you know, a top 20 prospect to get Sonny Gray. You know, plus you'd have to give up more than just one player. So yeah, not a rental. They're not going to give up one of those top five guys to get Aroldis Chapman or Andrew Miller. I mean, there's been talk. Bring in a big bullpen piece. I love that idea. They're not going to trade one of those guys to get a bullpen piece. I mean, you look at what they gave up to get Sam Dyson, and that's, you know, that was an unusual deal. You're not going to get away with trading a backup catcher and a left-handed relief specialist, both in the minor leagues, to get a guy that's going to end up closing games. I still don't know how the Rangers were able to do that. More importantly, I don't know why the Marlins even considered it. But getting away from that, you're not going to trade one of the guys you just mentioned to get Chapman or Miller. Now, would they trade something significant to get one of those guys? I think so. I think adding that, you know, beastly a bullpen piece in the last third of the season makes a huge difference, as we saw last year. But the guys you just mentioned, they're safe unless you can get that frontline starting pitcher.
Let's take Nomar Mazara out of the equation, and let's put Profar back in the equation. So Profar, Gallo, Ortiz, Brinson, Tate, of those five guys, obviously each organization is different, but which one of those five guys do you think has the most value on the trade market?
I'd say Gallo. You know, power is such a sexy commodity, and even though it's come back the last couple of years with young players, it's still a commodity that most teams probably feel like they don't have enough of. There's just so much upside with Gallo, and when you look at what he's done this year, cutting the strikeouts down even further, extending his at bats, drawing walks, if he has solved that swing, that fastball up in the zone, that guy is a potential transcend the way the distance he can hit the ball, the exit velocity on his base, it's just sickening. And I think that's the guy that most teams would ask for. But like you said, every team is different. There's going to be a team out there that feels like they're a center fielder away and we got to have Brinson. Or, there may be somebody who sees Dylan Tate as a potential number one. And if that doesn't work out, lockdown closer, and may say, Tate's got to be in the deal or else we're not talking. It'll be team to team. But I would guess that Gallo will be the guy that gets the most play.
Who do you think you got to decide right now, nunchucks to your head, somebody's threatening you, they need you to answer this question. Ortiz or Tate, who has a better career?
Huh. In a way, I almost see that like asking about Gallo and Mazzara, because to me, when you talk about Gallo and Mazzara, and we've seen enough of those two guys, and maybe this will make some sense. Gallo has the higher ceiling of those two hitters, but he also has the lower floor by a lot, which means if both players completely reach their peak, Gallo's the guy that's the more transcendent superstar level player. Mazzara is a fantastic player as well, but Gallo will be the one on the cover of magazines. But the flip side is there's a much better chance that Gallo never puts it together than Mazzara, we're already seeing is figuring out how to adjust to big league pitching. I think that may be the same thing with the two pitchers, that Tate may have the higher ceiling in terms of pure stuff. If it all comes together, Tate may be the more likely of the two to be a number one starter, but Ortiz is the better bet to be a productive big leaguer at a level where you'd look at him in the top half of a rotation. So I'd say maybe Ortiz is the safer bet along the Mazzara lines, but Tate is the one that if you want to dream on it and see everything come together, full health, he's probably the one that has the higher ceiling to reach superstar level.
Man, I wouldn't want to be John Daniels.
You would.
Well, I would love to be John Daniels, but in this situation, these are some tough decisions. You've got these. I think Mazzara confuses it because Mazzara arrives and you're like, oh my God, this guy's 20, 21 years old, and he just hit arguably the longest home run in the history of Globe Life Park at 21. And so you kind of start looking at all the other prospects through Mazzara goggles. You're like, oh, this is just one of five. So if they just hold on to these guys, they're going to have five, six, seven of these. It's like, so you got to take those goggles off and you got to sit here and say, okay, if you're JD, Mazzara is special. Doesn't mean that all these guys are going to get here and be phenoms, or are they?
So you'd rather be the Angels GM and not lose sleep at all because you don't even have any of those guys to even worry about. There's nothing in the farm system, and you don't need to decide which ones to trade and which ones to hold. Easier for you?
All right, keep two, trade two. You got Profar in for Mazzara. So Profar, Gallo.
Brinson, Tate, Ortiz?
Yeah.
Five?
You can leave one out, but or trade two, keep three.
If I'm going to trade two, as much as I hate it, I'd probably trade Profar. I think he's going to have a really, really solid career, and he's going to make plays that help you win games in every phase, and I would hate to see that on another team. But the way things line up right here, I'd say he probably is the first one to go. And, I hate to say it on any of these guys, but if it means that the decision is made among ownership and the front office to make sure that Ian Desmond doesn't go anywhere, then I'm okay putting Lewis Brinson on the market. I love the idea of a guy that's 6'5" and plays center field like that and can hit 25 bombs and steal 25 bags and good guy, will be good in the clubhouse. Brinson's the kind of guy that you hope to add to the system every 10 years in terms of a guy that can play up the middle. But, you know, he's not a sure thing. And right now, the way Desmond's playing center field, I would just love the idea of him in that role for the next 4 years. And so, yeah, I'd probably say, while I wouldn't look to trade any of those guys, if Profar and Brinson moved, you'd be okay at the big league level, and you'd get a lot back.
All right. He's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. This has been the Spitballin' Podcast. Please tell your friends about it. Download it. Share it on social media. Spread the love around. We certainly appreciate it. And be sure to be looking for the next Spitballin' episode. Again, for Jamie, I'm Ben saying thanks for listening. And until next time, happy baseball, everybody.